Jen Zamperali on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.
I don't think we ever talked about it enough. The event of 1999, the MTV EMAs, was held in Dublin. Not only did Ireland host a number of Eurovision Song Contests in the 90s, Dublin was also chosen as a location for the 1999 MTV Europe Music Awards, the EMAs. The guest list was packed. They're all knocking around town. Britney Spears and Christina, Mariah Carey and Eminem and Whitney Houston. I remember Jennifer Lopez and Puff Daddy were together and they were in Dublin staying in the hotel in Temple Bar. It was madness. Celebrities up the yin-yang. Can I say that, Cormac?
You can. It says Westlife were there as well. They didn't have to come very far. Sure, they only live around the corner.
They're only up the road. We didn't like Jennifer Lopez.
The cars were up in Dundalk.
I think she stayed in the Morgan, if I remember correctly. I never forget it. They were all here. They were all here for the do. It was amazing. Now, as you're well aware at this stage, lads, we're celebrating all things 90s today, and it is joyous, I have to say. And boy, do I have a treat for you now to mark some of the biggest cultural moments of the decade, I have to say, at home and abroad, not just here. Is the king of 90s himself, Cormac Battle, and he's given himself that title.
I gave myself that title, yeah. I'm not really the king of the 90s at all.
Why did you say it?
I'm sick of writing down my old pal Cormac Battle joins me.
Okay, we'll call you the king of the 90s.
Call me the king of the 90s for this. But
one of your favourite eras? Did you love the 90s?
You know, it's a very sweet spot for me. But I'm going to start with what is, I arguably, and I know there's people up in the office now who will completely disagree with me because we're all having a big argument about there's put it this way, up in the office at the moment there's various views on the music we're playing. Some people are like, yeah, I like that song. Some people have different views about certain songs, but I would
contend, a normal day
yeah, lots of round going on, but I would contend that this is the most important cultural moment of the entire decade of the 1990s. Oh my God!
Max is wearing his Nirvana t-shirt today.
I swear to God,
Max,
Jane.
Our BCO today has won the day, sorry.
He has, he's got a Nirvana t-shirt on. And that's, I didn't play the chorus of the song because
it's next.
The start. No, I have the chorus there if you want it. But I just thought, when I was coming in this morning, I thought, do you know what? It's not the chorus of the song. It's the intro of the song that drives people absolutely wild.
Well, that changed your life. We know that changed your life.
No, I know that song actually altered the course of my life. And that came out on the 27th of August in 1991.
Wow.
Nobody knew who Nirvana was at the time, only a few nerds like myself, because they did have an album that sold about 500 copies that came out before that one. But Nevermind came out on the back of that, Nevermind being the album which contains Smells Like Teen Spirit, and obviously went on to be one of the biggest selling albums of all time. And what made it even cooler was, you know, Kurt Cobain was the lead singer of Nirvana, and he didn't really like the song. He said it's a bit too slick for my taste. It wasn't kind of, and the fact that it all went out of control. He didn't want to be famous. He didn't want to be a big rock star. And what really annoyed him with the worst was that all the people who got into his music were the people that would never hang around with him in school. He was kind of an outcast in school, so it was all the jocks and all the gang that got into his music. Sadly, you know, he took his own life a few years later in 1994, but he changed. It rendered, like, there was loads of bands like Motley Crue around at the time. Remember all these kind of hair bands? It didn't completely kill off Bon Jovi, but nearly did. But it rendered all these metal bands that were knocking around out of business.
There is a moment that has been documented when that had changed the course of the music industry.
Oh, completely.
In the Pam and Tommy drama series.
Yeah, that's right. I saw that.
And there's a moment at the end of the show and Tommy Lee Jones, who was in Motley Crue, is sitting watching MTV and he's watching he's listening and watching this. Okay. And this is the era of the hairspray and they're all you know, the girls in scantily clad clothes on. And he knows it's over.
He looks over and he says, he knows it's over. Says, it's all over.
It's all over.
But then, you know, and it drew an awful lot of attention to Seattle at the time, which was, you know, nobody knew Seattle for music really up to that point. Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, all these other bands suddenly became absolutely huge on the back of all that. I would say that was the strongest worldwide cultural moment. Okay. But a lot of people would disagree with me on that because I'm hugely biased.
Well, it is the era of the boy band. Yeah. When you think about it, isn't it?
I mean, what a contrast, because the 90s was a massive period for boy bands around the world. There's the Backstreet Boys, there's Take That, there's NSYNC who are back. There's, remember, Boys to Men. Mm-hmm. I could go on and on and on, but especially in Ireland as well. You know, we don't have like a huge tradition of boy bands, but we did in the 90s. We had two. Westlife just about got in there in 1999 with their debut single, which is this.
I'm never gonna say goodbye.
Great tune.
'Cause I never wanna see you cry.
So, yeah. That was their debut that came out, went to number one in 1999.
Spare it on. It's a great karaoke song. It's a great tune.
Ah, look, you know what? It is a great tune. And, you know, well, these...
Why
look,
they did
it's
that
a well-written,
one,
it's
I don't
a
know,
well-written,
this one.
I would say it's a well-written song.
Sorry, Barry Manilow they did, didn't they?
They did Barry...
Uptown Girl.
No,
Billy Joel.
No, that's Billy Joel. They did a lot of covers.
But this one, that's a tune now. That's a tune.
No, it is. And they just got in under the wire in 1999. I think they had 14 number ones after that. And we all know what happened with Westlife. But let us not forget that Boyzone, that was their heyday as well. And they made their day infamously. Boyzone, you know, who went on to sell millions of records as well. But they had a really cruel kind of launch on the Late Late Show.
Some might say a hard launch.
This was a hard launch on the Late Late Show in 1993. It's kind of mad stuff. They were just brought on. It's worth looking at on YouTube. They were just brought on. They didn't even have a song, and they just danced around. I think it was a Take That song. They were dancing around. Everything Changes. I think they were just dancing around to it, and. So this is Boyzone. They're on. Louis Walsh in the audience saying how fantastic they were going to be famous and all that. And Gay Byrne invites the audience to make comments on what they'd seen and what did they think about Boyzone and their prospects. And this is what happened.
Yeah, I was just wondering, like, you know the way they say that Take That is just a marketing package?
That's right.
Very well marketed.
Yes.
Is this going to be the same thing?
This is exactly the same. Yes. Yeah.
Is there some realistic...
No, they've no talent whatsoever. Nothing. They've no talent whatsoever. They don't sing. They don't write music, and they don't play instruments. And they're probably very successful.
We've got one great talent, though.
Yeah.
We're all Irish. And we're off in Dublin.
There you go.
Isn't that harsh?
It's so cruel.
It's so cruel. But
and
Gay was
untrue,
so wrong.
Untrue.
No, actually, you know what? He wasn't wrong because he said at the end, they'll probably go a long way. Just at the very end.
Say they've no talent, they can't sing.
It's
horrible. It is horrible. It actually makes me feel really uncomfortable.
But nobody would say that anymore on a chat show either. It also reflects the way the 90s were as well.
I remember walking home from school in my uniform from St. Mary's in Balldoyle, and I remember talking about that with all the girls. Walking home, we're like, did you see the lads on the Late Late Show? And everybody was talking about it. So was it cruel? It was genius because everybody in Ireland were watching them and talking about them. So it was kind of genius in a way. I think it put them on the back foot. I do think there's a bit of a chip in their shoulder, and rightly so. Because if that is the launch into your career, they're always trying to prove themselves. They never really got a pat on the back from Ireland. And that's how it started.
Do you not think so? No, because they went out to sell 25 million records. And you still think... that Ireland never really took them seriously.
I think Ireland, after that, I think they were playing catch up and they were trying to prove themselves consistently here. And I think that's why a lot of them, they had huge success in the UK and abroad. And I think they will say that themselves.
Yeah, I would agree. I think you get the impression that Ronan sort of feels that he never did, from his own country, get the... sort of the accolades that maybe they actually deserved. So another huge thing, because there's so much happened, it's very hard to condense this down. But in 1994, you were talking about how we had the MTV Awards in the Point Depot. We had the Eurovision Song Contest.
Yeah.
And that happened. But it was what happened during the interval of that, which became the most well-known interval act ever in the history of the Eurovision Song Contest. We're talking about Riverdance, of course. But it also introduced us to Michael Flatley, Gene Butler, and turned into a stage show that went all around the world. Three of them at once were going around the world at the same. There was so much demand for Riverdance around the world at the time. There was three productions at once at any one point around the world at the time. But you knew something phenomenal had happened by the cheers of the crowd. So this is live from the Point that night. And here is the late Gerry Ryan's reaction to what he had just witnessed himself.
Certainly was. Okay, we need to move on because you've so much here, Cormac.
Well, just play this clip. Play it.
Yo, I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. Don't tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I'll tell you what I want, what
obsessed.
Again.
Obsessed with this.
Again, it's one of those songs that you don't start with the chorus. It's the intro.
Yeah.
That does it. That was their introduction to the... It was just that the little laugh and the intro was what announced their arrival. And they just went supernova instantly, becoming the biggest selling debut single of all time. Wannabe, of course, from the Spice Girls. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the term Cool Britannia?
No.
Do you remember that? During the time in the 90s, so not to get heavily into politics, but Labour hadn't been in government for 20 years. So Tony Blair, who became Prime Minister, aligned himself with like the Spice Girls. He was inviting them, Oasis, Blur, and all these kind of like cool people to Downing Street, getting his picture taken with them. And it became this kind of movement called Cool Britannia, where Britain became very, very, very proud of itself. And the Spice Girls were really, really part of that whole thing. And they brought... Girl power was born through that. And, you know, there's many, many theses on third wave feminism and all this kind of stuff about the Spice Girls. But the Spice Girls, 1996, that came out bang in the middle of the decade.
Ginger Spice.
Something else,
I always want to be Ginger Spice. Okay, what's the next one?
Harry Potter.
Go on.
The first Harry Potter book came out in 1997. Did you know? Do you know what JK stands for? JK Rowling, who wrote the book.
JK, no.
It's Joanna. I thought it'd be something a bit more glitzy than that. So anyway, 1997, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone by J.K. Rowling was first released. The initial run of how many copies of the book would you say was printed of the first book?
500.
How did you know?
I think I read it somewhere.
500, you're absolutely bang on. Only 500. She wrote it in an Edinburgh coffee shop. Mm-hmm. She's a single mom at the time and she went under the name Joanne. And she didn't even... this is what the first interview she did when it was starting to take off. Have a listen.
I was very broke at the time when I finished the book and I didn't have money to photocopy loads of copies of it. So I typed a manuscript out and then I went to the library and found a copy of the Writers and Artists Yearbook and I made a long list of all the agents and the publishers that dealt with children's fiction and sent it to them one by one.
So she didn't have the money... So she had to go to the library to photocopy what she typed out and sent, and each time she'd photocopy it and send it out, and it turned into what it is now.
Do you think she changed her name to J.K. Rowling to sound more
cool, like, well, you know, kind of a bit more kind of?
Or it could be a man, and maybe she'd be taken more seriously. I don't know. It's just a question.
I don't know J.K. Rowling. It is an interesting point because it does sound kind of cooler, doesn't it, J.K. Rowling?
Well, it could be a man, it could be a woman, it could be, you know what I mean? Nobody knows. Joanna is...
Maybe Joanna. You're right. It's not something I considered. And not something anyway. I'd be too afraid to give an opinion on
it. Okay. What's next?
I want to end on this.
Oh, why are you ending on this?
Because you're because this is a pivotal moment of the decade.
Oh, right, this song. This goes on. This and on,
I know. Because that is the name of the song. Okay, look, Titanic came out, right? The film Titanic. It won 11 Academy Awards in 1998. Came out in December, actually, around Christmas 97. It was the most expensive film ever made up to that point. Mm-hmm. $200 million. And did you know Enya was asked to do the soundtrack? And Enya said no, allegedly. I think that's the truth, though. So Celine Dion muscled in on the action. And so her song was attached to it. I would say it's one of the worst songs in humanity since recorded history. And I'd like you to have a listen to this and see what you think. I know, that's enough of that. I hate the song so much, right?
Yeah.
And I'm really into the Titanic as a thing, but
I'm going to make you feel better.
I mean, come on, seriously.
Sorry, I just want to make you feel better.
Come on, I feel a bit better. They should have used that.
They should have used that for the Titanic.
They should have used that.
It was more apt,
but
yeah.
I'll tell you the truth. I hated that Celine Dion song so much. As a protest, I wouldn't go and see the movie. I only saw the movie about 5 years ago. I wouldn't go and see it when it came out for about 20
fair
years.
Fair enough. It would do that to you.
Do you like that song?
No, but it is a lesson on how to sing a song. She's just incredible.
She is incredible at what she does.
It's just is it just because it's overplayed? I don't know. What do you think? 51552. Amazing moments there from the 90s. Did we miss any? Did Cormac miss any?
Of course we did.
Any?
There's so many I missed, but I just don't have time to do.
Favorite? Give us your favorite moment from the 90s. We're going to keep it light. Keep it
Oh yeah,
fun.
Keep it light, because there's a lot of darkness.
A lot of misery,
there,
yeah. 51552. Jen Zamparelli on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.